The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
It was the break he had been waiting for. For almost 2 years, Michael Allen Carbo Jr. sat behind bars, convicted of a murder that had haunted the small town of Chisholm, Minnesota for decades. But on May 8th of 2024, everything changed. The news he had been desperate for had finally arrived. He's being held in prison at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Rush City. And on August 16th of 2022, a jury found him guilty of murdering Nancy Doherty in her home, a murder that occurred back in 1986. But just up until a couple years ago, it was a case that had gone cold. And that all changed once DNA evidence cracked it wide open, which resulted in Carbo being sentenced to life behind bars.
So what's this news that he got? Is this a retrial?
Exactly. So the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled that 6th Judicial District Judge Robert C. Friday made critical errors during Carbo's trial. So now he's getting another shot in court.
Okay. I mean, that could turn things around for him.
It really could. Now, this is a story of Nancy Doherty, a woman whose life was tragically cut short, and Michael Carbo Jr., the man convicted of her murder decades later. It's a story of unanswered questions, forensic breakthroughs, and the relentless pursuit of justice. And you'll soon realize that this case has many plot twists, but most importantly, Nancy Doherty was a loving woman who cared about her community and her family. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And this is Crime Salad. So when Nancy died, Chisholm lost an important member of their little community. Someone who loved deeply and gave her community all of herself. She was a beautiful soul and a beautiful spirit.
Sounds like it.
And so in the year of 1986, Nancy lived in this very small city of Chisholm. Chisholm, Minnesota today has an estimated population of about 5,000 residents, and it's located in St. Louis County. And it's often called the heart of the Iron Range because it sits right in the middle of the Mesabi Iron Range, a mountain range in northeastern Minnesota known for its massive deposits of iron ore, which is a critical component to steelmaking.
Sounds like a real diamond in the rough.
Yeah, it is. So currently, I read that they are beginning new mining projects due to its rich deposits of precious metals, such as gold, silver, platinum, copper, and nickel. But as for the 80s, this town was going through some tough years. Mines were shutting down, jobs were disappearing, and a lot of people were packing up and leaving. And one of those people who was looking to move was Nancy. In fact, she was supposed to move the very day that she was killed. She had big plans for her future, but someone took that all away from her.
Sounds like someone didn't want her to move.
So with all these things going on in town, everyone's leaving, Nancy, who's at the age of 38, she was wanting more out of life, and she was determined to build a better life for herself. In Chisholm, she worked hard, juggling jobs as an aide at Heritage Manor Nursing Home and also as a part-time bartender. But that wasn't all. She also volunteered as an emergency medical technician with the Chisholm Ambulance Service. And Nancy, she had this gift for meeting people at their lowest points. Whether it was an elderly woman reminiscing about her younger days or a middle-aged man drowning his sorrows in a mug of beer, she was just there for everyone.
Sounds like she had a pretty big heart.
Yeah, and she really did. If you needed someone to listen, Nancy was there. No questions, no judgment. She was someone who just truly cared.
So it sounds like she loved what she was doing. She just maybe wasn't being fulfilled, or maybe the town was just falling apart at that point. But she needed to move on.
Yeah, so one thing that really initiated a change of scenery was her divorce that was almost finalized from her husband, Jim Doherty. During this time, Jim was out of the country on tour in Germany with the Air National Guard. And Nancy, who was the mother of two, a son and a daughter, was looking for a fresh start. She was ready for her next adventure.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say she didn't get to go on any type of adventure.
No. Someone took that opportunity from her. And according to the courts, we still don't know who took her life that fateful early morning on July 16th of 1986.
So what's interesting here is 38 years have passed. So that's a long time from the beginning of this episode. And it's interesting because you said in 2024, a man who was convicted of murder is now possibly getting a retrial.
Yeah. And I told you there's a bunch of twists in this. Well,
windy roads.
Yes. And there's so many bits and pieces of what happened within this trial, within this case, and also what happened that night. But we may never have the full picture. One person who has helped piece together some of the events is a man named Brian Everson. Currently, he is nearing his 70s, but Everson was one of the last people to see Nancy alive. He admitted that he and Nancy had dated and they had a sexual relationship, but she eventually decided to take a step back, although this hurt him when she put things on hold, and he made no secret of his feelings for her. So according to court documents and media reports, he was persistent in his pursuit of her, often making his intentions very clear.
So persistent, huh? So basically what we're saying is it would probably be like a stalker case today. But back then it was probably a little sweet and persistent.
Yes. But he made these advances and he always stopped as soon as Nancy told him no. And it seems like he heard that word a lot from Nancy at the time. Now, that night, Brian had returned from the Twin Cities area. This is the same city Nancy was planning on moving to the next day from a job interview. He was heading to the Hibbing Chisholm area because he wanted to see his family and his friends. One of those friends was Nancy, whom he considered to be the love of his life. The duo had gone to Tibrock, a pizza parlor and bar in town, and they talked for a few hours. Brian remembers that Nancy had received a phone call, which she took while they were out, but she never told Brian who was on the other line or who called.
Okay, so just to clear things up, and maybe it's just for me, but she's nearly divorced from her husband. She's on a date with Brian, the persistent guy, right?
Yes.
The maybe new boyfriend, I don't know. But then she gets a call from someone, but she never says who it was.
Yes.
Proceed.
And now, it was possibly another man. He wasn't really sure, but it was weird because she didn't tell him who called. And maybe it was another man. Maybe she didn't want him to be jealous because at the time she wasn't really sure of their relationship.
Yeah, she's just now getting out of divorce. I mean, she could be talking to multiple guys.
Yeah, and she really didn't want anything with Brian. Like, she was kind of pushing him away at this point.
But Brian was persistent.
Yes. But the time they returned to Nancy's home, it was close to midnight. And Brian, he stayed a bit longer. He had used the bathroom. But Nancy said she was tired. And so he left her house and he started to drive towards his parents' house in Hibbing. And he had driven about a block when he realized that it was starting to rain, but it was like a light mist. And he was worried that the weather was going to ruin their plans for tomorrow, which was to help Nancy put her items in storage. Now, because he was worried about the rain, he turned around and he returned back to Nancy's place. And he kind of just popped his head in the door and saw Nancy there, and she was putting on a different shirt. Now, to him, this was a little strange because she just said she was tired and it kind of appeared like she was going out for the night.
Oh, like on a second date, possibly to the mystery phone call.
Yeah. Now, when he asked Nancy about the plans that they had for moving her things into storage, mentioning the rain, Nancy said that she would discuss it later, and so according to Brian, he just left and went home. Once he reached his parents' house, Brian said he chatted with his sister and father, drank a glass of milk, and then he went to bed.
Okay, so I have to say this, and you're going to look at me funny, but this kind of reminds me of the Baby It's Cold Outside song, but like kind of in a reverse way. But the weather's bad, they're drinking milk, he's persistent, but anyways. So did he ever see Nancy again?
Sadly, no, because that evening was the last time Brian saw Nancy alive.
Ooh, suspicious.
All right, let's talk about winter travel. You know, that magical time of the year when we're supposed to relax and enjoy the slopes?
Well, it's supposed to be magical, but instead we're wrestling oversized bags, skis, and one suitcase that you swore would fit everything.
But honestly, lugging around all that gear through the airport is the worst.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could I forget? I was like a pack mule walking through with all of our stuff.
Exactly. And that's why I love Ship Skis. They ship your ski and snowboard gear directly to your destination. No stress, no lost equipment.
And let me tell you, my back thanks them. Because nobody wants to look like a pack mule just trudging through the airport.
Well, with Ship Skis, you don't have to do that anymore because you just schedule your shipment, slap on the label, and they handle the rest. They even include complimentary insurance, real-time tracking, and on-time delivery.
But I have to admit, Ship Skis is a game changer. They deliver to over 180 countries, so whether you're hitting the Rockies or, I don't know, Antarctica.
Pretty sure Antarctica is not a ski destination.
Yeah, only if you were super extreme, it would be.
Anyway, right now, Ship Skis is offering Crime Salad listeners 20% off your first shipment. Just go to shipskis.com and use code CRIMESALAD.
That's shipskis.com. Use code CRIMESALAD and make this winter travel season less about baggage and more about bragging rights on the slopes.
See, I knew you could stick the landing.
As long as someone else is handling my skis, Ship Skis for the win.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Now, in addition to being one of the last people to see Nancy alive, he was also one of the first people to discover her dead body. He was the first to touch her cold fingers.
Yeah, that's always a little bit weird. Like whoever smelt it dealt it.
Exactly. Now, the following morning, Brian, he returned to Nancy's home because he's getting ready to help move all of her things into storage. However, things did not seem right when Brian arrived at Nancy's home. He knocked multiple times. No one answered the door. That was surprising because Nancy had been expecting him. She would surely answer the door for him. He looked around. The doors were locked. The shades were drawn. And the drawn shades were unusual because Nancy rarely drew her shades. Brian felt something was wrong in his gut, and he knocked on the neighbor's door. And the neighbor started to help Brian. The neighbor also thought the situation was strange himself. He recalled his daughter and her friend, whom she had invited over for a sleepover. They heard strange sounds in the middle of the night. The neighbor and Brian looked more closely for evidence on Nancy's property, and they found matted grass in her yard. Nancy's keys were also lying in the yard. There was also vomit. All of these things were just really odd.
Yeah, and we've seen this in other cases where, and maybe I'm jumping to conclusions, but Brian, in this case, pulled in a neighbor. It's almost like he needed like a witness or, you know, to pull someone else in.
Yeah, it is a bit strange. But anyway, Brian and the neighbor, they called the police at the neighbor's house. And when the police arrived, the two of them accompanied the police to make sure Nancy was okay. Brian remembers seeing Nancy's body. It was a horrible look. That's something I'll never forget, he said. The group found Nancy's body underneath the blanket on her bed at about 3 p.m. on July 16th of 1986. Nancy's mouth hung open, her arms spread wide. One of her hands could be seen falling over the bed's edge from underneath the blanket. She was also naked.
That's sketchy.
Now, later, the medical examiner would say that Nancy was sexually assaulted and manually strangled. And it did seem that there was some kind of struggle because her glasses were on the kitchen floor.
So, with all of these things, it seems like a clear indication that there was most likely a struggle. So, she was probably attacked. The grass was all messed up. Her glasses were thrown around. I mean, maybe someone attacked her when she was leaving.
Yeah, that's a possibility because there was also the keys in the grass and there was vomit in the grass, which was strange.
Right.
It seems like it is that type of scenario, but for whatever reason, she was brought inside and she was naked on her bed. The primary evidence linking anyone to the murder primarily consisted of DNA. Law enforcement officials found semen that was left in her body and DNA that was under her fingernails. Law enforcement officials had clipped some of her fingernails to gather some of the DNA. And the crime scene technicians also found a fingerprint on the toilet.
Okay, so now they have DNA. This should be a pretty easy case to solve, right?
You would think so, but it actually wasn't. Former police chief Scott Erickson, he had thought that they would find the perpetrator in a short amount of time. He even said there was a frustration because it happened in Chisholm, and it was a solvable case. We had a small community. We had good DNA evidence. We never got any leads that went anywhere.
Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense because now we're, what, 40 years down the road?
Yeah, right. And the police, they were working hard on this case. They wanted to solve the murder of one of their residents. Though the course of the case's history, police officers had more than 100 suspects. They collected DNA from every person, but none of the DNA matched the DNA found on Nancy's body. They also reopened the case a few times with promised rewards to anyone who could provide details to lead to the conviction of the murderer.
And nothing happened.
Nothing. So in 2002, Minnesota's Bureau of Criminal Apprehensions, Cold Case Unit, and the Chisholm Police Department, along with the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office, reopened the case due to technology improvements. The BCA is a statewide criminal investigative agency which is headquartered in Minnesota's capital, St. Paul. And the BCA is known for helping local Minnesota law enforcement agencies solve complicated investigations with the most up-to-date technology and techniques. The Bureau is a subsidiary division of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. So at the time, BCA Special Agent Randy Strickler, he was talking to the press, and he told the Associated Press, "We want this case alive again. Sometimes, in hashing it over, folks remember things that no one mentioned at the time, and we want to hear those details. To encourage anyone to come forward with any information, authority officials offered a reward of up to $10,000 for information, which would help police officials arrest and convict the murderer."
Okay, so did anything come now?
There were no promising leads. Oh, it was still a dead-end case. So police officers, they tried again, and this time it was in 2006. The Chisholm Police Department and the BCA held a news conference, and this time they upped the reward to $50,000, but nothing changed. There wasn't a conviction, no arrest.
All right. I'd say no one knows anything if they're not coming for 50K.
And they did run the DNA through the databases that they had, but they only had access to criminal databases. The DNA did not match anyone in those databases. And then in 2020, Chisholm police officials, they had an idea. If it weren't for this idea, the Chisholm Police Department may not have received the lead that split this case wide open. So the Chisholm police officials asked BCA officials if they could provide a sample to Parabon, a Virginia-based company which examines genealogy databases, including law enforcement databases. And this is used to find suspects for unsolved and cold cases throughout the nation. BCA officials thought that this was a great idea. The BCA unit officials worked with the Chisholm Police Department to provide a DNA sample to Parabon in July of 2020. And Parabon's resulting analysis showed that Carbo could be the prime suspect.
Okay, so 24 years go by, and we finally have a suspect. And it's some guy named Carbo?
Yeah.
Not Brian?
No.
I thought it was Brian.
Yeah, it was sounding like it, wasn't it?
Honestly, yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder where this guy even came from.
It's really odd for sure, and we'll get closer to that information in a little bit.
So what exactly is Parabon? Because it sounds like Cinnabon.
So Parabon is a DNA technology company located in Reston, Virginia, and one of the services Parabon offers. Company scientists can use familial DNA to identify DNA samples that have been taken from previous cases. Ellen McRae Graytack is the director of bioinformatics at Parabon. She says what Parabon really does is look at forensic DNA in a new way. And she explains what she means further. She goes on to say, forensic DNA has been used for decades. It's been amazing in solving cases when a person is in a database or when the suspect is someone that the police have looked at and they can do a direct comparison between the crime scene sample and that person. What we've done is come along and say, you know, there's a lot more information in DNA than just that one-to-one identity. We can generate new leads and give detectives new information just based on that DNA sample.
Okay, but I'm not a scientist, so what does that actually mean?
So instead of having or looking for a DNA sequence that is exactly similar to the DNA sequence of the suspect, researchers are now finding suspects by looking and testing for DNA that is similar to family members.
Oh, okay. So it's not a one-to-one. Now we're looking at like a one-to-family or something, like multiple people.
Yeah. So once you find family members based on the analyzed DNA sample, law enforcement officials, they may have an easier time finding the suspect. And that DNA can provide clues to the suspect's ancestors and close family members.
And this works?
It does. They've had success. Parabon's chief genetic genealogist, Cece Moore, talked about the company's success. And she said, this genetic genealogy team has helped law enforcement with over 310 positive identifications over the last almost 6 years. So we're averaging one case per week, where we're able to help law enforcement identify the contributor of the DNA.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So I'm guessing that the Chisholm Police Department aren't the only ones doing this, though, right?
They're definitely not the only ones. A similar technique was actually used to find the Golden State Killer. The director of bioinformatics, Graytack, said, usually detectives are coming to us with cold cases where they really have exhausted everything they can think of. However, a lot of forward-thinking detectives these days are starting to realize as soon as that DNA profile doesn't get hit in the database, there are other pieces of information they can get from the DNA. And so we can do that analysis and help them on their way. Make it so that cases don't go cold in the first place.
Honestly, it's pretty impressive. Science is cool.
But she also cautioned that it's not very simple of a process, even with all the technology. Right now, there are more than 23 million people who have used direct-to-consumer DNA tests to figure out their ancestry.
So is that kind of like the 23andMe type stuff?
Yeah, 23andMe, Ancestry.com. I think there's a couple others, but... However, three of the largest companies who are in charge of these databases have forbidden law enforcement from using them. Therefore, companies like Parabon are only limited to the two smallest databases. Those are GEDmatch and FamilyTree DNA, but they're unable to access any of the other ones. Graytac added, if we could use those databases, we would be extremely successful, even more successful than we already are, at identifying violent criminals, stopping serial killers and serial rapists. It really is in the public's best interest for us to have access to that. At some point, maybe there will be enough pressure on the management of those databases to allow it.
Okay, so now that Parabon identified Carbo, what happened next?
So the Chisholm police officers, they may have never suspected Carbo because he was never in their pool of suspects at all. He was living in Chisholm, but Carbo was a new name added to their suspect list. Police officers immediately started taking the next steps. They looked up Carbo Jr., and he was born on March 23rd of 1968. When the murder occurred, he lived less than a mile away from Nancy's house, and he was only 18 at the time, and he attended school with Nancy's children.
Well, it's almost no wonder they didn't suspect him then.
Yeah. Now, once they had Carbo's information, they set up surveillance of Carbo's apartment, and they found out Carbo still lived in Chisholm, even after all of those years. Now, though, he lived in one of the apartments at the Lincoln Square Apartments. And on July 23rd of 2020, the police officers who were surveilling Carbo's apartment saw Carbo carry a bag to the garbage dumpster and disposed of the garbage bag in the second can of the three standing city garbage cans. Now, after Carbo dumped the trash, he went to his car and he drove off. Meanwhile, the officers retrieved the garbage bag Carbo had dumped, and it was easy to find because it was the only bag in the dumpster.
It's a pretty stinky situation to be in. Did they find anything?
Well, they were looking for anything that they could find that would have Carbo's DNA on it. There shouldn't be any confusion on whose DNA was collected from the trash because Carbo lived alone. Then they took all of these items and they transferred them to the BCA laboratory in St. Paul on the following day, July 24th of 2020. And it only took 3 days before the police received the BCA laboratory report on July 27th of 2020. And the report said that the items collected did in fact have DNA, and the DNA belonged to one person, and the DNA was consistent with the DNA that was obtained from the sperm cells that were on Nancy's body.
Okay, so we got our guy.
Mission complete. Still, the police wanted to be extra careful. So on July 29th of 2020, the police went up to Carbo and they asked him for a voluntary DNA sample to send to the BCA laboratory. Now, they didn't tell him that he was a primary suspect at all in the investigation. And after testing this voluntary DNA sample, the BCA laboratory found that this sample, too, was a match for the DNA sample collected from the garbage and for the DNA that was collected from the semen at the crime scene. DNA was also found on a washcloth and swab taken from Nancy's vagina.
Okay, so there's no denying now that this is Carbo.
Right. Now, the police, they had enough for a search warrant. The same day they retrieved the voluntary sample from Carbo was the same day that the Chisholm police arrested Carbo.
So I'm a little thrown off why this case took close to 40 years to be solved, because was it just like a technology thing? Because honestly, it seemed like after they had this information or whatever, it closed pretty quickly.
Yeah, he wasn't even in their minds that it could be him. You know, he's like this 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And the arrest was big news for the small community. Chisholm Police Chief Vern Manor held a press conference on Wednesday, the evening of Carbo's arrest, and he said This is a day Nancy Doherty's family and all of Chisholm have waited for over 34 years. We are truly gratified to provide some answers to Nancy's family about what happened, and after all of these years, to take a killer off the streets. Gina Haggard, Nancy's daughter, was also present at the event. Chief Manor read a statement Gina had provided to the gathered media. In the statement, Gina shared a touching memory of her mother during a trip to Alaska. Nancy had come across victims of a car accident stranded on the road. Her training and compassion as a volunteer paramedic immediately took over. Nancy stayed with the victims, offering comfort and support until they were airlifted to safety. Gina's words reflected the profound loss felt by everyone who knew her mother. She said, "There are no words to describe the terrible holes left in so many lives, including my own. So many tears and struggles. She has missed so much, and I miss her love and guidance every single day."
Such a bittersweet ending, though. I mean, they now have the suspect, but they still lost Nancy.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Gina's statement also noted that it was difficult to speak about her mother, and that's probably why she had the chief read the statement on her behalf. Jack Lopesto lived in the same apartment complex as Carbo. The unmarked cars that stood watching over the apartment complex didn't fool him. He said, "I saw the unmarked law enforcement vehicles and the plain-clothed sheriffs." What shocked him was the arrest that they made, because he was living right upstairs. He said, "I mean, I wouldn't have known anything. You know, even the neighbors were shocked that they didn't know a person like this was living in our building." And Jack continued, "It does make you think, and it makes you wonder, out of the blue, someone did this and they lived next door to you."
Honestly, though, how weird would it be to live next to somebody and then something like this happens and then he's just like plastered all over the news? Like, this is a dude that you saw on a daily basis, right? Maybe even talk to.
It'd be like a really surreal feeling. Like, oh my gosh, I was living next to a murderer, or underneath one, however the apartment building was.
Right.
Even people within the community, they, you know, would see him around and they just thought he was just some pretty normal guy. A co-owner of Tom and Jerry's downtown, which is a landmark in the Chisholm community for more than 40 years, said that he never would have suspected Carbo because he would come in as a customer, and although it wasn't very often, but he just seemed like this normal guy. You never would have guessed it. And the owner of Tom and Jerry's, which was a bar, his name is Jerry, and he was familiar with most of the community and the people who would come in and out, and he was also familiar with the Doherty family. He said, "We knew the dad pretty well. We knew Nancy pretty well. They used to come in, so the whole thing is just pretty amazing."
It's probably just a small town like what we live in, where everyone knows everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And the office of the St. Louis County Attorney put out a press release on the same day as the arrest. The release read, "The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Chisholm Police Department have made an arrest in the 1986 murder of Nancy Doherty of Chisholm. Michael Allen Carbo Jr., 52, of Chisholm, was taken into custody earlier today and booked into the St. Louis County Jail in Virginia on probable cause, second degree." And later on, the release said, "Mr. Carbo will be charged in the days ahead by the St. Louis County Attorney's Office. This remains an ongoing and active investigation."
So what was he eventually charged with?
So Carbo was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder while committing criminal sexual conduct. This charge carries a mandatory life sentence. But this trial had its challenges. Carbo's attorney was John D. Schmidt, and he is an assistant state public defender for the county of St. Louis. And he tried to throw as many curveballs at the judge that he could. Like, for instance, Attorney Schmidt tried to throw out the case, or at least the DNA evidence, by saying that the way the DNA had been collected was unconstitutional. Attorney Schmidt stated that there were privacy issues with the way law enforcement found their suspect and the way the DNA was collected. He said these issues violated the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment says people have the right to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures.
I mean, it's a nice little curveball, but it probably didn't throw the judge off that much.
It didn't. Judge Roberts Friday rejected such notions. He acknowledged that there could be privacy issues with the tactics law enforcement used, but he did not find any state or federal law violations. Judge Friday said police could use the DNA from the scene since the perpetrator had abandoned this evidence at the crime scene. These rejections most likely will create a precedent for law officials to continue using the same method to solve other cold cases, too.
I mean, honestly, I think he's right. This is new technology. Why are we not using it?
Exactly. And the majority of the Minnesota Supreme Court judges would agree with you, too. After the trial ended, where the judge found Carbo guilty, Attorney Schmid appealed the decision to the state Supreme Court. He again argued the DNA analysis, which was conducted by Parabon, had violated the Fourth Amendment. But as Judge Friday said, Carbo willingly gave his DNA, which included his genetic profile that was available when he left his DNA on Nancy's body. And there was also Justice Barry Anderson, who gave his opinion that Carbo gave up any expectation of privacy regarding his genetic information when he left biological evidence at the crime scene. And because of this, the police did not violate the Fourth Amendment by having Parabon analyze the genetic material. Therefore, according to him, the court was correct in denying Carbo's request to suppress the evidence obtained through this analysis.
I mean, like he said, he gave up his right to privacy when he left the DNA or the semen on Nancy's body.
Yeah, exactly. Nancy's case has been a long and heartbreaking journey for her family. They've endured years of grief and fought tirelessly for justice. When Carbo was convicted in 2022, they believed that they had finally found some closure. But now, with the Supreme Court's decision to grant Carbo a new trial, those old wounds are now being reopened.
I don't know. I'm kind of torn on this. I mean, it's such a difficult situation. On one hand, the legal system is built on the foundation of fairness, and every defendant has the right to present a complete defense. But on the other hand, you're now just prolonging all of this, and you're opening up old wounds to the family. It just sucks. I mean, now everyone has to relive that tragedy again.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a done deal. Like, they already linked him to the DNA that was at the crime scene. So what more do they need to really do?
Right.
Now, this court's ruling, it means that Carbo will have another opportunity to present his case, this time with additional evidence that could raise questions about Brian Everson, if you remember the boyfriend, his possible involvement. Now, the prosecution, they will have to rebuild their case against Carbo, ensuring that the jury hears all the evidence, both old and new.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that this evidence doesn't automatically prove that Carbo is innocent. I mean, it's just giving him the chance to challenge the original verdict. But again, now Nancy's family's left in a terrible position.
Yeah, they now have to like sit through yet another trial and hear the story all over again, the painful details about her murder.
Yeah.
And they've been grieving for years and years and years, and it's just like never going away.
Yeah. I mean, this is what, 40 some years or something.
They've been through so much. And this retrial feels like it's going to be an emotional setback. But it's also a reminder of how complex the justice system can actually be. While the system must protect the rights of defendants, it's equally important to honor the victims and their families by ensuring the truth is pursued with fairness and integrity. And while we wait for the retrial to unfold, our hearts go out to Nancy's family. They probably need that extra hug because they're not just enduring another legal process. They're carrying the weight of losing someone that they loved very deeply. We'll continue to follow this case and share updates as they come. But for now, that completes this week's episode.
Also, if you guys are enjoying Crime Salad, make sure you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star on Spotify. And also, if you hate ads, you can sign up to Patreon for as little as $1 and you get no ads.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds great.
All right, and we'll see you next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.